Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished entrepreneur who helps entrepreneurs to exit, Mr. Damon Pistulka, who is in Seattle, USA. Damon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Damon is the founder of Exit Your Way. Mm-hmm. So, Damon, before we speak about Exit Your Way, tell me a little bit about your own background.
Yeah, I grew up on a large family farm in the middle of the United States. Grew up in with a family, a large family, and went to school for engineering. It was rather strange in the area where I grew up for people to go to college, but my parents thought that we all needed to go to college, and we all did. I have three brothers and a sister, and I started out in manufacturing and working in engineering in that role, and mechanical engineering and in plastics, and then in other industries all the way into some of the last companies. I started out in technical roles and then into managerial roles, and then actually building facilities and managing and running facilities, and then managing and running companies in the manufacturing sector, and then into some other sectors along the way after that. But I ended up in the last part of my career, for the last 10 or 12 years of my career, I was running companies for private equity groups, mm-hmm. where we were, you know, buying, selling, growing, doing the things that they do. And in those companies were various things, all the way from retail checkout solutions, like you go to the grocery store and the thing that you put your groceries on and goes over the scanner, to mm-hmm. Aerospace parts that have been in things that are on the moon or on Mars, things mm-hmm. that in the F-22s in the U.S. and the 787s and 737s and all kinds of things like that. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Fascinating. And then what made you become an entrepreneur in that too, to help others exit?
Well, when I was in my early 30s, I was about 35, 36, and I did my first exit with an investment owner. And I was with that company for about 5 years, but I was able to grow it to the value he wanted, and we were able to sell it successfully. And I was like, this is really something. Mm-hmm. And from the time I worked in the family business first, and this is only the second business I worked in. Mm-hmm. And there were investors, one of the owners, and then they had an equity group that was in it with them. And I was like, this is really fun. I always thought about business as an income generator, for a family or those kind of things, but really to build it, to generate wealth and to sell it is something I hadn't seen before. And I liked the whole process all the way through the sale. And I envisioned this kind of business at that time, but I didn't have the experience to do it yet. And went out and did my thing and did a lot of other jobs and projects and mm-hmm. things like that. And then I ended up, in 2015, I met back up with my partner now, Andrew Cross, and we had worked together in some of the last companies I ran, mm-hmm. and he was selling businesses at the time. And he asked me, he said, "Hey, do you want to be my partner? He was going to move to Salt Lake City, and he said, you just keep the Seattle office open, and we'll keep that going." Mm. I said, "Okay." And then about 6 months into it, I realized that I didn't like just selling businesses, because they don't often sell if they're not ready to sell. And what most people don't know is that the chance of selling a small business, something under, you know, $20 million is really, really hard. It's about a 20% chance of success. I had no idea that the success was that low. You know, my experience in the equity world is you're buying, selling companies all the time. You just think it's kind of what happens. But in the real world, outside of those kind of businesses, it doesn't. It's very hard. And I thought this would be we were selling businesses, and of course the success rate is really low. And we were like, hey, let's improve our success rate. And let's start helping those people actually, you know, set their goals, build the businesses, just like we did in the equity owned companies, use some of the same tools that we did, build some better ones even, and then do that. And that was in 2016, we started doing that. And since then it's been, you know, just doing it and having a lot of fun with it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So my next question to you, Damon, is that how important is it for entrepreneurs to plan an exit, and how do they prepare for it?
Well, I'm going to tell you what happens if you don't, usually.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't plan for your exit, we all are going to exit, right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We're going to exit sometime.
Yeah.
It's either you can do it on your own terms and plan, prepare, and do it like you want, or you can put it off and get to the end, and you probably will end up liquidating your company and shutting it down and walking away, and all your employees are going to have to go find another job someplace else, because that's really how important it is. But if you take if you plan ahead and you're working 5-6 years ahead, it doesn't have to be a huge business.
Mm-hmm.
You can create a business that will generate the wealth that you need and something that somebody else will buy after. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. You can do it, and you will sell it if you do it right.
Well said. And what, in your opinion, are some of the big challenges a lot of founders face?
Well, first of all, everyone's good at something, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a founder, I could be good at, I'm a plumber or electrician, or I'm a carpenter or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'm good at a carpenter, but I'm not necessarily good at running a business. But I'm a good enough carpenter that people will pay me to do the carpentry work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a carpenter that learns how to be good at business, you probably aren't going to be doing as much carpentry work as being business person, helping others in your business do the good carpentry work and making sure that you can multiply your efforts by having others help you do the carpentry work. Mm. And the biggest problem is people can't make that transition. Mm. They're good carpenters, and they can only do as much as they can, as the carpentry they can do.
You know, when I was reading about you, you also talk about a framework you have developed to support entrepreneurs in their exit.
Yeah.
Do share your thoughts, and if possible, give me an example.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty simple, actually. We always like to start with, how much money do you need out of your business to do what you want to do after your business? And it makes the person think. It's like, first thing is, I'm not going to be in my business forever. I need to think about what I'm going to do after. And I need to think how, in terms of what my lifestyle is going to be like, so I can then back into how much money I'm going to need total. And I look at other things like my portfolio, my other pieces of my portfolio, real estate, whatever it is. And I go, okay, my portfolio is $5 and I need $10 total. Well, that means I need $5 from my business between now and the time I exit to have my $10 and do what I want to do after that. That's where we always start, because one of the biggest apprehensions when somebody sells a business is, am I going to have enough money for what's next?
Correct.
Because they're used to the cash flow that business has given them.
They
don't know. And I mean, it's a valid concern. So you really have to do that. And then we also, it's not just something we have them do by themselves, because financial planners are very capable of doing this. I mean, they can say, you know, how do you want to live your life? How much you want to travel? Do you want to have, you know, multiple houses? You got grand, you know, leave charity. They work all that in there. And then they go, well, how much comfort do you want to have? Do you want to have 50% padding? You want to have 25% padding? You know, so they just really can help build that number out, because that is the biggest gut-wrenching thing that someone has to do, because, well, one of them. It's a lagging concern. Is it enough? Is it enough? Is it enough? And to get a deal done, you have to have a number in mind, and you have to say, listen, if I get $10 million, I'm good. Not sit there and go, well, should I try for 15? You know, or yes, you should try to get the most you can. But if I don't, and I get 10, I'm good. Not get to the end and go, well, I'm not getting 15. I'm going to stop. Because you know, you've sold businesses, you don't want to do it more than once. And it's one of these things where they have to get that number in their head, because that's the first part of it. Because then we have our target. And once you have your target, it's pretty simple. We value the business today We know what the business has to look like at the target level. And then what we do is we help them put together budgets. And then the whole key to the execution piece is get their team executing on a weekly basis to hit the target goals that they need to. And getting the right people in that you need to in the beginning, because you may have to have some specialists to help ramp sales.
Yeah.
You may have to have some specialists to help them with some systems and some other things to really help scale fast. But getting those people in place and measuring their progress all the way through and letting them see if they're meeting the goals or not. So your team is actually helping pull that business where it needs to go.
Very interesting. The other thing that always happens in an exit is that a potential buyer starts the whole process of due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
How much time, in your opinion, should an entrepreneur devote to preparing a company before opening up, his or her books for diligence?
It depends. I mean, it can take you it can take you easy 90 days mm-hmm. to do what you need to do, because if you don't have, if your financial records are a mess at all, mm-hmm. you should go back and fix them. Mm-hmm. It's not even worth starting, because your deal is going to be done. So, but average time for people that we're working with someone that's got a $10 or $20 million business, mm-hmm. it's 60 days maybe that they're mm-hmm. doing it. We're doing it while we're marketing the company and getting things mm-hmm. ready. The biggest thing is if there's any legal things that are hanging out, that mm-hmm. is the biggest thing you got to get taken care of one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And if it's something you can't take care of before people start their diligence, you have to have the lawyers working on it and going, this is how we mitigate it. 100%. Mm-hmm. The buyer will not have any risk from it, because you won't get anything done if that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a buyer, other than, of course, clean books and no legal challenges, what else does a potential buyer look for?
The owner can't be involved in the business very much.
Okay.
That's the biggest thing ever. I don't care if it's a $50 million business or it's a $250,000 a year business. It doesn't matter. I had a $50 million client a few years ago that was making about $10 million EBITDA every year.
Mm-hmm.
The business, when you look at market, that size, those kind of things, it should have been, the value of that thing on the street should have been about $50 million mm-hmm. at least.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting offers from private equity of $15 to $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
They had four owners in that business. They were all CEO, CFO, technical officer, and somebody in operations.
Mm-hmm.
And we helped them hire people to replace those people. Mm-hmm. They were still there mentoring the people. Mm-hmm. And they were able to sell it later for about a year after those people were all in place for about $70 million. And it is critical that the ownership is not in the line of doing things. You can be a board member type. You can be a CEO that has your team running the business if that's it. But if you're in the business doing it, it's really, you're selling somebody a job at that point.
Correct.
And if your business is bigger or you have key technical knowledge, the owner does,
mm-hmm.
you probably won't sell the business, because everyone understands if you sell your business for a lot of money, mm-hmm. your incentive to work is not going to be the same as it was before.
Correct. Correct. Well said. The other thing that I have seen in exits is that from the moment an exit is announced, there is a lot of uncertainty that comes into the management team and the employees. How can the founder and the buyer sit together and make sure that the team remains with the company and not just walk out?
That's a challenge. It really is. And that's where you're, as the seller of a business, understanding that you're selling it to somebody that wants the employees, that will carry on some sort of legacy that you think your employees will be happy to be a part
mm-hmm.
of, is really important. But then how you do it, obviously buyers a lot of times will not close a sale of a business without getting agreements with key employees.
Mm-hmm.
So your top 3 to 5 people are probably going to have to sign employment agreements with them. But to get them to stay, it's really the owner themselves. They have to do a good job of selecting a buyer that's going to carry on that legacy that the people will want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And they have to create the right culture, I believe, beforehand. That's, you know, we are going to sell this business. This is what we have to do because we have things that we want to do in our life that we can't do when we have the business. And people will understand generally.
I've also seen, Damon, a couple of instances where it's the business is acquired and then they ask the founder to continue for a period of 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
How should a founder handle this kind of a scenario?
Don't do it unless you have to.
I see. Okay.
Honestly, don't do it unless you have to. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody that's enjoyed it. Hmm. In fact, I'm in another, I think next week I'm actually interviewing someone on my live stream that's going to talk about that. He was at a place that he had a successful company, he sold it. They wanted him to be around. And I think he made it about 3 years. Couple of companies I've been part of to have the owners stay around. I mean, most people barely make it a year. If they do. And that's where it's so, and it happens a lot. It happens a lot though, because I see it a lot in SaaS companies, like, because that founder, a lot of times they are that brains.
Correct.
And people can see that SaaS company can really go. Mm. They just need some other pieces. So that's where people will still buy. They'll pay overall a good price for it, but that founder, they want them around, and you're an employee at that point.
Mm.
If you're okay with that, then it's probably all right. Mm. But it's one of those things. You're going from owner to employee. That's probably the biggest change that they have to consider. Is it going to be okay for them to do that?
Interesting. And, you know, in a lot of the tech companies or the SaaS company that you just spoke about, revenues may be low, but opportunity for future revenue is huge. Or at least that's the expectation of founders.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tackle such expectations when it comes to valuations?
Well, first of all, valuation is not any art. It's really science.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, we go out and look at comparable companies.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, okay, this is in the market. This is what they're doing. SaaS companies are no different. I mean, even unicorns are no different. There's a value placed on those to get that based on the eye of the beholder in some cases. And that's where you get some crazy valuations. But 90% of the companies, it's simple math. It's like, if you really can hit these projections and that's good, this is what the value is going to be. And that's really where we start with it. But to get them to that, sometimes it takes them actually getting an offer or two from buyers and seeing it themselves.
Mm.
Because there are people that can say, oh, your business is worth $100 million. Mm. Because we see people getting 20x. Well, 20x is 20x of what, and what kind of business was it? There's so many variables. You really have to see sometime. You get as close as you can to comparables and say, this is about where we think it's going to be. And then you got to let the market decide. And if the owner's not willing to do that, and they have unrealistic value expectations. I mean, that's the number one reason why businesses don't sell, is unrealistic value expectations. Yeah,
great response. Thank you. I have time for two more questions. My next question is, I wanted to ask you, what is the difference between preparing a business for sale to another party as compared to planning a succession?
Oh, yeah. Well, planning a succession is more about the people and those kind of things, right? When I look at preparing a business for sale, I talk more specifically about the structure of the business to make the structure, the team, and things ready. Planning for a succession is more about, do I have somebody in line that can take over the business for me when the succession is going on? Mm-hmm. And when you look at that, you really have to look at, especially if it's going to be some family members, what are the capabilities of my family member mm-hmm. or members, and what roles are they going to play, and how do we build the team around them mm-hmm. to make them successful long-term? And succession, I think, is actually harder than selling a business
mm-hmm.
because when you think about it, succession is often done by the founders not taking a loan out and having the children pay it back, but they just let the children pay them money over time for the business. And what you do by doing that is you're putting your entire business at risk. Whereas if there was a loan that was taken out for whatever the business can afford, at least you can give yourself a cushion knowing that, hey, they have to run the business right. But in the planning for a succession is really about getting the team around your children or your family members to be successful long term. Right. Preparing for the sale of the business is different because you have to know who your buyer is going to be. And just like a product, understanding why your customer likes your product, you have to do the same thing with the business. Depending on the size, depending upon the industry, depending upon if it's a strategic buyer, like a search fund buyer that will have investor back, but a CEO that's in there, or a private equity group that's looking to buy a platform company that's able to absorb other companies. That's one thing. Or a private equity group that's buying a company that's an add-on to a platform. I mean, you really look at these and you have to understand what my management team needs to look like. And what is my trajectory, growth trajectory?
Wonderful. And my last question to you, Damon, and that is, this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. A very large number of them are startup entrepreneurs. Based on your amazing journey, what would you say are three lessons or three learnings you want our viewers and listeners to take away?
Three lessons. So that's a good question.
Okay.
Because the first one is nobody cares what you do, what you're selling. They don't care. They only care how it's going to help them.
Yeah.
And if you are selling something and you don't know how it helps people, you need to figure that out because you won't sell enough of it to do yourself any good.
Yeah.
And you might as well just go to work for somebody else. The second thing is if you don't like to sell, you're not going to be successful as an entrepreneur because you have to sell. You have to sell every single day until you've sold enough that you can get a team of people selling or others selling around you, but selling. And the last thing is and the last lesson I've learned is you're going to need to make mistakes. You're going to need to invest in things and they're not all going to work out, but you need to keep investing and making mistakes. Otherwise you're not going anywhere.
Fantastic. And on that note, and your three wonderful lessons, which are nobody cares what you're selling. They only want to know how it helps them. I think that's a very powerful statement. Your second one you said was you have to sell, otherwise you're not a good entrepreneur. And you said in the beginning of a program, everyone has to exit. And the third one you said was make mistakes and keep investing in whatever mistakes you're making, because that's the only way all of us learn. Thank you, Damon, for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your own journey, about Exit Your Way. Thank you for talking to me at such length and in so much detail about all the challenges and the opportunities that entrepreneurs have to be able to make an exit from their business. And I'm sure listening to this conversation, there could be a few potential clients for you who may reach out to you, but that's between you and them if they do reach out to you. Thank you for speaking to me and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.